Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number 54. Thanks, Don. And I'm your host, Dallas Busha, and with me today we have...
Don Moore.
Al.
And we have a guest.
Brent.
This is Brent. He's a good friend of mine, and he's a guitarist in my band. And we've been trying to get him on for a while, and we finally got him on here to come hang out with us just for a little bit. So, welcome, Brent.
Thanks, guys.
You ready? You got a bunch of questions?
I don't know about a bunch, but, you know.
I do have one question. What's it like going into a band that had one guitarist and you're the other one? What was that like?
What do you mean?
I've seen the band play. I've seen Dallas's other band play. He was a sole guitarist. What's it like for another guitarist to join a band where you got one? Is it any different, or is it just flow?
It just flows pretty good. I mean, I just picked up on their songs, you know, started playing with them, and eventually I started becoming part of the writing process, so.
Yeah, it's been fun, because, yeah, at first, you know, to get him used to the songs, we'd play around with him, and he'd just kind of accentuate things from the existing songs and just make them sound beefier, a lot better, and now it's gotten to the point...
Punchy.
Yeah, punchy. There you go. But now it's gotten to the point that now that he knows those songs, we can sit down and focus and write more songs. And I can't tell you how fun it is to actually write a song with another guitarist, which I've never really done in the past.
I know, I haven't really done much of that either. It has been a different experience. It's pretty fun. I mean, it's really challenging. It's good for you, I guess.
Do you guys both play lead?
Dallas does most of the lead. He's kind of teaching me some stuff, though. I'm learning.
Well, you did some interesting stuff. I've heard some of the practice recordings you guys have done. And
surprise.
Well, yeah, but you're doing, I can hear things you're doing in the back. It's not like you're just following. I'm not a musician, so, you know,
listen. Yeah, I like to try to, you know, give him a beefier sound, because he does a lot of accentuating, like, you know, really technical notes, and to have, like, a heavy riff going behind that with the bass, it really beefs it up a lot.
Yeah, that's really nice. It was in the back, and I thought, wow, I can hear this stuff too, and it didn't overpower or fight it. It was just nice.
Awesome. Thanks,
but I was just curious what it was like to join in, because I can't imagine Dallas being real heavy-handed and making sure you knew that he was a guitar player in the band, and you're just taking up space. He's very overbearing, you know.
I'm a prick like that.
He is kind of like that. He does step on my dreams quite often.
Oh, man.
You know, I don't like this. You know what?
You say that to everybody.
If you don't shape up, you're out of the band. I say that to Al almost every episode.
I'm telling you, man. You know, I'm getting ready to go, too.
I go, listen,
I was thinking maybe you guys are doing, like, the Thin Lizzy twin leads or whatever, you know. Boys are back.
We do a little.
We're trying to do a little more Iron Maiden style, but
I like that.
The double lead, kind of the octave notes.
Yeah, like the
Leonard Skinner did that too. How many bands did a double lead?
I don't know.
Well, pretty much everybody from like 1969 to like 1980.
Yeah.
Actually, the early 90s.
Yeah,
a lot of did that too.
Yeah. A lot of metal bands still do that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
Stones
had two guitars.
It's like it went away from that, and it's like going back to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you saw that walk away from it in the 90s.
Stones, Keith and the other guy, and Ron Wood, trade, you know, leads.
Yeah,
and
forth, yeah.
But not
it's
not a double lead. They're playing at the same time.
Yeah, no, they're not doing the metal thing.
Now, the country western bands ever have a double lead?
I don't know. Leonard Skinner.
Yeah, that's true.
They're rock.
Yeah,
they're
more southern rock.
Marshall Tucker Band, I don't know.
They weren't
same
country
genre,
before.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, well, okay, never mind.
Well, something really special brought us together today, and although it didn't quite go as I had planned, today's Free Comic Day. It's May 4th that we're recording the episode. And I personally was really, really excited to run in everybody and hang out and, you know, check out the free comics and see what kind of deals a lot of shops had. Well, it turned out I had some other plans I had forgotten about early in the day, so I didn't get out to our local shop, Yancey, with Brent until almost 6 o'clock.
Totally ruined Brent's first comic book day, by the way.
I know. I did. I get out there, and Brent and I are walking.
Just kidding.
Yancey's in the mall, so we're walking down the mall hallway, and we're getting closer to Yancey, and I see all these mall security lifting up all these empty tables and folding them up and putting them away. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah,
Pretty sure we just missed Free Comic Day. So I'm a little upset. Rook had been there all day, I'm pretty sure, so we're going to have to sit down in a future episode and talk to him about it. But in the meantime, Don and Al, you guys got together. You did some stuff today on Free Comic Day.
Yeah, well, in Largo, we went to Comic World, and I wasn't really excited about Free Comic Day. I always go pick up a couple of free books. But this year, the only thing I was excited about was us getting together and doing a show. And I went to Comic World, and I was really shocked at how much they had. And I guess they're letting everybody get 3 books, but they said I could get 4. Oh, okay.
It's because you're like 6'5".
But it was a little disappointing because they had so many books I was interested in getting, and there's like 3 more I wanted to get. And, yeah, I was really excited. So we went to a couple of other stores on the way up here because Dallas lives all the way in Atlanta, Georgia. And nobody had any more. They were all out. I guess they all had such a big turnaround. Yancey was hopping. There were so many people in there.
Well, it's in the mall, too, so everybody's shopping and doing all their things.
It was more busy than any other time I've been in there.
Yeah, it was.
At Comic World, they were excited because other years they go, people just get the free comics and leave. But they were kind of glowing because they said there was all these waves of people coming in earlier, and they were talking about how much money they had made on it. Well, that's good. So.
Well, it's getting national publicity now, so, I mean, more people are getting into it. Kind of like Record Store Day, but that's different because you got to pay for the records. But the messed up thing about Record Store Day is I was over Martin. He actually went to the Record Store Day, and he goes, watch this. Go on eBay. All the records that they bought during the day were on sale at eBay, on eBay, like in the afternoon for like $20 more.
Well, and that's a sad thing, and I've said it in the past. A lot of the books you can find that I like, if I can't find them in a shop, I'll just get them on Amazon. But it's just that feeling of going into a shop and being around people that like the same kind of thing that you're into, you know?
Yeah.
Specifically comic books.
That's definitely what I thought was cool about it. I mean, even though we didn't get to get many free comics, it was still cool to be around people that are into comics.
Yeah, and you don't get a lot of that these days, you know, unless it's online. You might talk to people on forums or message boards, but you know, it's these kind of events that bring all these people together physically, and you can make new friends. I mean, it's a big deal for a lot of people throughout the nation.
You would think more people would be reading comics because you see them, but they only show up like in certain conventions and free comic days or whatever.
Oh yeah, but you can't find. Used to be you could find them in any drugstore, convenience store, bus station.
Sure. Yeah.
Now you have to go into a comic store to get them. And that's why they're just not in the mass consensus. That's why you don't see so many people reading them.
Oh, absolutely. It's a specialty product now, and you have to go to a specialty store to get it. And not a lot of people aren't going to go out of their way to do that. The average person, the average consumer, that doesn't really care that much about comics, but potentially might like them, he may never go out of his way to get some. Whereas if they were still sold at, you know, the corner gas station or whatnot, he might say, oh, hey, you know, here's a Superman. I'm going to pick that up back into it. That's how...
Yeah, you're
shopping, I got into
you're
it
shopping
when I was...
at Publix, and you tell your mom, hey, can you get me a comic book? Here you go. She throws it on the conveyor belt and all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly, because they're just sitting there ready and waiting for everybody to see.
But from reading the Marvel book that we'll talk about at some point, their target audience is 30 years old now anyway, so you figure everybody's going to have a car that can get to a comic shop. I mean, that's what the guy from Marvel said in the book. He said... Yeah. They target 30-year-olds.
Yeah, only the hardcore consumer that's been buying for this long is going to go out of their way to go
kids
buy that stuff.
Kids don't read them. They're playing video games.
Yeah.
It was in the 90s when first.
I was going to say, you got your Kindles, too, and all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
I'm sure any hardcore comic book people that don't buy them, I guess there isn't any of those. If you're a hardcore comic person, you're about buying comics.
But and you can download them, too.
I just don't know, like, where the future's going with. That's what I'm saying, you know?
Well, and I think that's why there you see especially superheroes in all different forms of media because, you know, Marvel, DC, and these big companies are trying to get their properties out there for kids to see. And if kids are watching movies and playing video games, they want to put their comic characters in movies and video games. Otherwise, these kids are going to grow up not knowing who the characters that we grew up are with.
True.
Are.
True. But anyway, so it was nice to... It was Free Comics Day was nice at one shop.
Yeah.
The other two, it was kind of like empty and barren.
Well, I don't mind if, you know, if I go there and they're empty. I mean, that's fine. Other people got them, and that was good. So
you gotta
get
there early.
You guys missed out, you know.
You got to get there early, it seems, like at 10 o'clock in the morning or something.
I know, man. It sucks.
No. Oh, well.
So what kind of free comics was on the platter today? What did you guys get?
Walking Dead, Prince Valiant.
Yeah, they had Prince Valiant. It was the Hal Foster Sunday strips, in which I got. They had a... I didn't get it. I wanted to. It was a... Buck Rogers, and it was the old comic strips from way back, which I've never seen except in, you know, articles.
So are these basically advertisements for hardcovers or collections that are coming out soon?
I'm guessing.
Yeah. Because remember, Alan and I were talking just the other day about a couple years back, a hardcover company releasing Secret Agent X9 free comic for Free Comic Day. It was IDW. Uh-huh, and because a lot of these companies, mostly IDW and Fantagraphics, collect all these old strips and all these hard-to-find books and comic strips from, you know, from the 20s on, and they collect them in these beautiful, huge bound editions, you know? I mean, look what Fantagraphics did with the Peanuts books. Look at Don's Popeye books that he gets. It's a great way to rediscover these old comics, and it's beautiful.
Now, of course, I cheated. I went to the comic shop last night, so I got my free comics last night, so, you know. But he only gave me four, so I couldn't buy. I was able to get The Walking Dead for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks,
but
man.
I did get a 2000 AD, like a large size with the Alan Moore story in it.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you have it here?
No, but aww. I'll bring it to the...
Well, you said that you found out there was a Gilbert Hernandez.
There's a Gilbert Hernandez. I haven't seen it anywhere.
Yeah, I would have liked to have gotten that.
He didn't get it at our comic shop, Comics World, so...
But I was really surprised at the array of books they had. It wasn't just like one kind. They had all kinds of kid books, kind of arty books, superhero books. But I thought, well, this is fun. You know, like I said, there was a lot of books I wanted to grab, and... You know, she said, you can take four. I've been telling everybody three, but you can get four. Okay, so...
Yeah, ooh, you get one more.
That's awesome.
And there was a couple they had to pull to the side because they had, like, superhero books with bondage in them or something.
So yeah, they had them by the register.
They had them by the register, you know. Yeah, cool. It was like, whatever. You know, for all ages.
Okay, so, Brent, you've obviously been around comics most of your life, probably, but you've never been deep into them where you read them a lot and all the time. But you've been exposed to a lot of, like, the Marvel movies and all the recent stuff coming out and all the those kind of characters. And I know you like those.
Yeah,
so what do you like about those? Like, who's your favorite Marvel characters from the movies?
I like the new Punisher Warzone that came out a few years ago. Did you guys see that? I don't know why I like that.
There's a movie?
Yeah, they made the one, you know, like... What was it, like 10 years ago?
Yeah, they made the John Travolta one.
It was pretty cool.
Dolph Lundgren before that.
Oh, that one's awesome, yeah.
Wait a minute, John Travolta was the Punisher?
No,
he was the villain.
Oh.
And the one that they filmed in Tampa, which I thought was the coolest.
Thomas Jane, I think, was the name of the guy that played Punisher. Yeah.
But they made another one with Ray Stevenson. He plays the Punisher, and it's Punisher Warzone, which I know is like pretty much... That strip of comics, I don't remember how many there was. I think there was a few, like it was a series.
Yeah, there was a Warzone series back in the 90s, Jigsaw, and it was...
Yeah, Jim Lee?
There was a John Romita Jr. Punisher Warzone.
Oh, yeah,
you're thinking of the War Journal from the 80s.
War Journal, that's right.
It was pretty awesome.
But the cool thing, the Warzone movie, I didn't see it, but I heard it was good because it's more like a Punisher comic where
exactly.
It's kind of over the top and like super bloody. And
yeah,
it's what
I
the
could
comic
totally spoil
was.
It for you, but I won't. It is super over the top. It's good. It was good. But the Avengers movie was really amazing.
Do you like the Marvel movies? I mean, you think they're doing a good job with them?
They're pretty cool. I mean, I actually like the DC movies so far with the Batmans more. I'd like that darker. Like, they seem a little
it's
darker.
It's more of a realistic kind of tone, I think. I love the Dark Knight.
I can't
films.
Wait to see the Superman movie. That's going to be great.
Yeah, that looks good. That's coming out soon, too. I think next month.
Next month?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's a conundrum for you, Don.
Okay.
Don's a huge Superman fan. Yeah. Right? And I know you're not too keen on comic book related movies just because you don't, you know, you like your comic books in the medium that they were born in. But would you see the Superman movie? Are you at all excited about it?
No, I'm not really. I guess I'm just indifferent. I've seen trailers for it. You know, Phil's been showing me at work. Excuse me. And it looks pretty neat. But I'm not really thrilled. If you buy it, I'll probably watch it.
And I will buy it. I mean, it looks good.
I was talking to Don. Here's my problem with the Marvel movies. I hear there's a new Fantastic Four coming out.
We need a little jingle that says, like, Al's Rant.
Al's Rant. I'm going to go off on
Here's
it.
The thing.
Well, one of the ideas behind the new FF is it's going to be the Human Torch is going to be an African-American. And I'm like, well, how are they going to work that if Sue Storm isn't? I guess he's going to be her adopted brother or whatever. I don't know about that, you know? I don't know if I can get behind that. You know, that's pushing it a little bit.
They're just, you know, once again, they're updating it for a new fan base. But, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, but they're all, those are properties, you know? This is their moneymaker, so
but
it's
I'm sure,
not...
But Don and I were talking, we're not sure if Marvel has any control over...
No, they do not. It's not a guess.
Yeah.
Marvel sold, they license the characters out. That's why...
Yeah,
the license works that you have to do so many movies, and if you don't do it in so many years, then it lapses back to Marvel.
Who's that, Warner? No.
Sony has Spider-Man. That's why they did that new Spider-Man. Fox has X-Men. I don't know if they have Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Warner's got the DC movies, right?
Warner owns that stuff.
Yeah, Warner owns DC.
But no, let's see, what was it? Fox has X-Men, I think Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
I don't know who has Fantastic Four.
I don't either. I mean, I saw the first one. I didn't see the second one.
That's why they rebooted X-Men to that first class. And now they're redoing the Fantastic Four again, which I don't know.
I don't really like that they remade the Spider-Man movie. I mean, I thought the new one was cool, but I liked the Tobey Maguire ones. I don't know if they were...
I didn't see the point of it, although I really liked the movie, The Amazing Spider-Man, that came out recently. I would probably venture to say I liked it as much, if not maybe a little more, than the Tobey Maguire ones. But I didn't see the purpose of doing that. Hollywood's obviously obsessed with rebooting franchises, so they don't have to create anything new.
Don will tell you why.
Certified cash cow.
Why?
We were talking about it before. The reason they rebooted Spider-Man is to keep the license going.
What we just talked about.
No, I mean, but I understand that. But why didn't they just continue and do a number four?
Well, that's what I wonder. Why didn't they just do some more stories instead of retelling his origin?
That wouldn't make the license null and void.
Well, that's, I don't know.
I don't think Tobey Maguire wanted to do it anymore, did he?
Yeah, but they could have got somebody else to play it. You know?
True. That's one of those things, though. It seems it's too close. It's too soon. I mean, it's literally just a few years ago that Spider-Man 3 came out, and it's...
Yeah, it's not like it came out 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is the case with most reboots.
Well, they're doing Guardians of the Galaxy now, so that's going to be interesting. It's something different.
That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the difference is those Marvel movies, they just keep building off of each other and going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if you watch it, you're watching another story. You're watching the Spider-Man, you basically saw three movies, and now you're going to see the three movies again. They retold his origin.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, maybe in this new series, they won't combine Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy as one person.
Which one is the original story? That's what I don't understand.
The original Spider-Man story?
Spider-Man, yeah. I mean, is it Gwen Stacy or is it Mary Jane?
It's both.
Mary Jane came later.
They were both involved in the character, but initially it was neither of them were in the story from the beginning. There wasn't really a romantic lead.
Yeah,
well,
he was the secretary.
There was a girl in high school he went with named Liz he liked. Yeah.
And it was Betty Brant.
Yeah, when he started working at the Daily Bugle, there's Betty Brant, which he had a crush on. Then later, Gwen Stacy came into the strip. And then much later, Mary Jane came in, but she was far later.
Mary Jane was like the 70s, right?
No, 60s.
Oh, she was 60s.
Yeah, she was a symbol for Mary Jane, though. You know, that weird little smoking thing. Really, honestly.
Marijuana. Oh, that's hilarious.
Hold on. My aunt. I have an aunt named Mary Jane.
No, but I mean, Chan Lee actually said it.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it was like a subtle, subtle.
It's funny, I have an aunt Mary Jane, too.
See? So it's not a reference. Stan Lee's wrong.
Maybe you guys are related.
He's always right. He wrote those books that we all well know.
Oh, Don was furious the other day. I came into work, and he throws me a Fantastic Four collection, an old one from...
The 70s.
It was collecting, like, I guess the Galactus issues and some of the old Lee and Kirby
books. Some of the
best
of the Fantastic Four.
And he goes, look at the cover. What does that say? It says, The Fantastic Four by Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Said nothing about Kirby or, you know, the anchors or anybody
else
involved.
Well, when you open it up, you know, it says other books by Stan Lee. And I got several of these I bought in the 70s. They have a Doctor Strange collection, you know. And every single one of them it says by Stan Lee. It doesn't mention the artist or anything else. And again, it just infuriated me. Dez wanted to borrow one, so I pulled it out, saw the other ones, and I just said, yeah, that's, you know. Now he'll sit there and be congenial, saying, well, I like to say co-created, like he's doing these guys a favor. But I remember a time in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, he created everything in Marvel solely.
Well, I want to explain a little of this to Brent too. Like,
wait! But speaking of Dez, we had a bag on him for this show because he listens.
We're gonna bag on Dez.
Yeah,
sweet.
Because of our show, because of our great epic show 50, he went on eBay and he bought some hardcovers of Druna. So thanks to me.
Nice.
Thanks to me. He's into like heavy metal.
Oh, that's
goodness.
Freaking hilarious!
If your parents ask, you didn't hear it from us.
We didn't corrupt your minds. Not us.
So, no, I wonder if anybody's bought any like EC books
or
eerie and creepy books.
Not
because
yet.
Of you.
Only me. I'm it. I'm only it.
Or you explain to Brent.
So in the 60s, and this was kind of the case quite often too, but the lines of creativity were a little blurred, obviously, at the Marvel Studios, and when they were kind of trying something new with the whole superhero thing in the 60s, and I wouldn't say trying something new, but trying something different from what they had been doing for the past decade, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were the two biggest kind of conspirators creating these ideas and throwing them together, and a lot of it was Jack Kirby, which is an artist, was creating these characters, creating these ideas, and throwing them together, and he would outline a story, literally go, you know, panel for panel, page for page, and Stan Lee would just kind of throw in some dialogue after the issue had almost been completely put together. So for years after that, Stan Lee, whether it was him directly or just the company, would always get credit for these comic books, and he was getting almost sole credit, like everything was created by him. And it was a big thing with poor Jack Kirby, who pretty much died penniless, right?
No.
Like the Nikolai Tesla of the...
He was pretty much penniless before he started gaining royalties back?
No, he was never penniless. He was a publisher of comics and all that.
He was a teenager, and his father had an accident. He was supposed to go to Pratt University. But his father was in some kind of accident and couldn't work. So Jack Kirby had to enter the field as a breadwinner for his family. And he always worked for money and had a family support. But no, he was never penniless.
Forget that.
He earned a living, moved to California, and a pretty comfortable life.
He lived a pretty comfortable life. And when he went over there, he was doing the DC books, which made him money, and then he did animation, which made him money. So, But Stan Lee is taking... Stan Lee should have given Ditko and Kirby co-writer, at least.
Some kind of a credit, showing that they plotted or, you know... Co-writer would be good. Yeah. Co-plotter.
Yeah, I mean, Stan Lee was the face and the mouthpiece of Marvel, so it was like, you know, hey. And he was coordinating, I think, most of the books anyway, so he took ownership of them.
That's one argument Jack Kirby always complained about, was that Stan Lee didn't edit the books. I think he did edit. I don't think he wrote them, but he basically gave himself credit for writing and editing, and got paid as a writer and editor for every book that he was involved in.
Yeah.
Even though these other men, you know, basically, even if he did give them some kind of a plot idea, it was a couple of lines of text, if that, Steve Ditko was completely writing Spider-Man at a certain point, and the only time Stan Lee ever saw it was when the artwork was finished and he added the dialogue in it.
Now, of course, something we never talked about, nobody was pulling their arms and telling them they had to plot it. That was just the way Marvel worked. If Steve Ditko would have said, "Hey, Stan, I need a more story," maybe Stan would have given it to him, but they took it upon themselves, seems like to me, to tell this whole story, because I guess they were just working from a basic idea.
Well, he didn't have time to do it.
He was doing all eight, nine stories. Including the great Millie the Model and all that good stuff or whatever.
So anyway, those artists were taking up the slack was what was happening.
Now, let's say later on, Tales of Suspense, which I was reading today, when they were doing the Captain America story, would Jack Kirby plot those stories too, or was it Stan Lee? Because it's a gray area. We're basically talking about the FF and a few of the characters, but I've always wondered whether or not who plotted those stories? Because, I mean, other people were doing them. Wally Wood. I guess Wally Wood was plotting the stories, too, for Daredevil when he took over. But how much was Stan doing with all the other people? Because we're mostly talking about Jack Kirby right now.
And we may never know, because when you get into something like this creative art form, people are getting together and conspiring and creating something together. So you never know who did what or who did more of what, because they're all just throwing out ideas together and...
When I did my couple of comic books years ago for independent companies, they gave me an entire script with, like, the action that was going on the page, but they didn't tell me what to draw on each panel. But you know who the writer was. That was his story or whatever. I don't know about the Marvel method. To me, the Marvel method was, like, created back then, but it seems like from everything I read, the Marvel method was just Stan saying, Steve or Jack, I want you to fight Galactus or the Green Goblin in this issue. Go for it. I don't know.
I think that held up in Marvel Comics for a good decade or two, at least.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that changed probably in the 80s. It became more writer-centric, and where the writer and the artist were clear and cut different, the writer would plot things out. You know, like Claremont, even Shooter, when he was writing.
Intricate storylines like they have now. You have to have somebody plotting.
Yeah, you actually have, you know, a group of writers getting together around a round table and actually putting everything together and plotting this out and creating it. So it's completely different than it was back in the
60s. Yeah, that's right. They dictate the whole storyline for the year or so, and then other artists get these assignments and follow that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's more convoluted now.
It's a big business, man.
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly what it is.
Well, it's more convoluted, and it turns off people, I think. Because if the stories were self-contained, easier to read, possibly more people will come in and get them.
Yeah, I think you're the biggest proponent for that kind of thing. And I agree with you that those kind of one-and-done stories are fantastic reads, and that's a great way
or
to get people to come in.
That's, you know, maybe three-parter.
Well, definitely just a few, even five.
Like, yeah, when you have to buy a ton of books that are seemingly unrelated, you know, buy Uncanny X-Men and then it crosses over into New Mutants, you know, you gotta buy two different titles.
One of the
titles.
Reasons I never really collected as a kid was because, you know, I'd run across, like, episode, you know, 200 or 300 of, like, X-Force or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I don't know, really know what's going on here. It's a cool comic. I like the story. I like the art, but...
Exactly, you've missed 20 years of continuity.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I worked in the comic shop too. That was the problem. You know, you get your speculators coming in, buying the books, and you have your readers coming in. But somebody off the street, hey, what's going on with Spider-Man? You're trying to explain it to them, and they're like, "Well, let me read it," and, yeah, and they never come back again because they need to like simplify it and make it so you can read it within three books, not have to buy every book in the Marvel Universe to get a storyline. And I think people will probably come in and get into it, and then maybe even complicate it. They need to get new blood or new readers.
Well,
in, you know?
They kind of do with certain titles. I mean, I know all the big companies are trying to do that. They have shorter titles that have a shorter lifespan or different stories that don't have anything to do with the long-form stories. But it's mainstream comics like what we're talking about right now are like soap operas. You know, they're episodic. Every month they're putting something out. So, number one, they want to get readers in, but they need to keep the readers they have. So how best to do that than to have a cliffhanger at the end of the issue where you have to come back? And that just continues every single month. There's another cliffhanger, so they have to keep coming back. That's how they keep readers, but that's not how they pull in new readers.
No problem with that, but when you have to buy, when you want to get into the X-Men, you have to buy, you know, Avengers to follow the story, then you're getting into, like, marketing and, you know.
Yeah, cross-marketing, cross-promotion. Yeah. Trying to
well,
get
some of those books, like the Avengers X-Men, I was getting the books that Walt Simonson drew. I guess he drew six issues, but the problem was you'd read one issue, and then when you read the second issue, I come to find out, I guess you had to read three other books before that.
Yeah.
So every month, whatever books they put out, you're supposed to get them all and read them all. So I've got six issues that basically tell six parts of a 100-issue story. And I remember Dez was complaining about that with the X-Men. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand until I got those Avengers.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not buying all those comics. I didn't want to. And, you know, when they're that much money, that's just insanity. So that's an issue.
I completely agree.
Now, the indie comics are different. They're self-contained stories or, you know, or one or two issues, and that's it. They've got the, I think they've got a better idea as how to do it, but not everybody's buying them because Marvel and DC glut the market.
Well,
that's the thing. They flood the market with all their stuff. Look at, I mean, a lot of comic shops, when you first walk in, all you're seeing
is Marvel and DC.
Is Marvel and DC busting in your face. You got to walk to the back of a shop or really go out of your way to find some indie comics.
And that's an issue we always talk about is books I like, they don't sell. Well, I get them, but nobody buys them. Well, some people probably would, but you can't find them because it's glutted with everything else.
Yep.
But
and the comic shop can't afford to get the indies because they're spending all their money with Marvel and DC.
But it's one thing. All these kids were looking at Kaboom Studios. They had all those Adventure Time and that cartoon. And I bought one issue myself. But when I went in there, I had to wait for all the little kids to clear out. And I got one. I was kind of getting a couple of them. $3.99 a pop. And I'm thinking, that's, you know... When I went up to the register, I paid almost $5 for it. I'm like, that's just too much for a comic. So, I mean, it's on nice paper. I bought it. So it's worth it, but, it's, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, on that note, let's take a quick music break, guys.
What are we playing?
We'll tell you when we get back.
should, then I think she should. Do you suppose she could save my life? If she could, then I wish she would. Guided by Voice is one of my favorite indie bands from the 90s, still around today, from the John Peel sessions in Britain doing Cut Out Witch live. Good stuff.
Now why do we want to play them for?
Because I like them.
That's the only reason?
And they rock.
Okay.
And they deserve to be like big stars, but they never were.
All right, well, one thing people be shocked about, now Dallas works from home. He came in Friday, and I had to warn him, the warm and fuzzy owl that we all love was long, long gone. This is "You Kids Get Off My Lawn, Al."
Oh, yeah.
Which,
grumpy old man.
I found very terrifying. And I will take full credit for that. even though I miss the old Al, it's because he read Marvel Comics The Untold Story, and it just seemed like his bright and sunny disposition was just crushed down and stomped and destroyed.
It was.
Tell us about it.
I'm back now. I'm feeling a little bit better, but see, the thing too is Don is coming by and he's getting a taste of my persona, my negative persona. You know, I have to be careful now.
Bizarro,
you know?
Al.
Yeah, Bizarro Al. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Al or whatever. Yeah, you know. Yeah, that Marvel book kind of soured me. Pretty bad, yeah. Pretty bad. Wait till you read it, Dallas.
I'm looking forward to reading it next, but what exactly is it? Well, I know what it's about. It's Marvel Comics,
it's
the Untold Story,
man.
But
it's the dirt. It's all the backstage hijinks and shenanigans.
Is it full of just kind of a review, or not reviews,
well,
but
what
interviews?
What the guy did, it's not really an untold story. He took interviews and reviews from, you know, every kind of print medium comics ever had, and he compiled it. Of course, I guess he interviewed some people and had insights, and a lot of these stories I'd heard, but when you read them in a storyline full and they give you more information, it's pretty amazing. But it starts off with, you know, when they were starting out as Atlas and they were doing a Captain America, Submariner, and Human Torch. And then it just kept going from there, and how things changed and things going on at the office. And all the creators in the 70s and all the drugs they consumed, which was...
and Jim Shooter in the 80s.
Which was, yeah.
Jim Shooter's infamous for being, you know, kind of a tyrant, though. And I,
oh, yeah. That book will show you some stories.
I've only heard it through word of mouth, so it'll be kind of interesting in reading the book and hearing
read
about
all about it.
Yeah, me too. I've always heard that. What?
Pilgrim.
Well, Jim Shooter wrote Superman and Legion of Superhero stories for DC in the 60s, I'm guessing.
60s, yeah, 60s.
He was only like 13 years old.
Yeah, he
was 7 feet tall.
Well, that's what I'd always heard was, you know, all these stories about this kid writing comics. And they said, then he stopped. And then he came back in 1975 to DC. And started writing Legion of Superheroes again. And they were making a big deal. Shooter's back. Well, as a kid, I didn't know who he was. And then he went over to Marvel. And then, next thing you know, he became editor-in-chief of Marvel. And stayed that way, you know, till they fired him in the 80s. But I was always told that when he left DC, basically, he got out of school and went to college. And when he got out of college, he came back. According to the book, that was never true. Basically, Mort Weisinger...
Yep.
You know, the Superman editor was a total nightmare. And he's calling his kid up at his house in Pennsylvania, chewing him out about, I thought you were going to school. You don't have any education. My 3-year-old daughter could write better than this.
Yeah.
And it said Jim Shooter was scared to death for the phone to ring, knowing it was him. And basically, he just quit. And then somebody found him. He was managing the KFC.
Uh-huh, yeah. He was still a teenager, at least a 19-year-old.
That's crazy.
Yeah. He didn't. I guess he didn't go to college. And but he was managing a Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they finally said, "Well, why don't you come back to comics?" So he did. And
The rest is history.
And
for
I mean,
good
in his defense, the book sold well. Secret Wars sold well. I mean, he was tough with the people, but I actually met him, and he was actually very nice to me. I was at a convention, and he was sitting there, and I guess. I don't know. I guess back then I was like, you know, braver. And I took my artwork and I showed it to him. And he actually praised it. And he said, this is really good storytelling. I want to give you a tryout job for Marvel. And I did. I got a tryout job. It didn't really amount to anything. But I got paid like a couple $100. Very nice to me. So I can't say anything bad about him. But from reading that book, he stepped on a lot of toes. And, you know, when you piss off 90% of your workers... Nothing good's going to come out of it, usually, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he made a lot of executive decisions, last-minute decisions.
He made a lot of people rewrite and redraw things at the last minute.
Sometimes three times. I mean, they would turn in the artwork for the book, and he says this is no good, and make them redraw the entire book, 22 pages. And there was a couple of times where he made an artist do it three times. And, you know, Tom DeFalco was freaking out because they were missing deadlines. You miss the deadline, you have to pay the printer a fine. It messes up all the distribution. The distributors complain that you have to pay them a fine. And it was just a windfall from there. But yet he kept doing it. And some artists quit in the middle of a book just because they couldn't stand anymore. And then he'd bring them back. But Secret Wars, I thought, was all his idea. Come to find out, the toy company went to him. And said, we're going to do a line of toys.
Kenner.
We'd like you. Was
Kenner.
It Kenner?
Yeah. Kenner.
They want a comic book series to go with it. And then, you know, the series did well. Karen Berger, who was always dealing with all the comic stores, when Secret Wars was finished.
Carol Kalish.
Oh, was it Carol Kalish?
Carol Kalish, yeah.
Who did I say?
Karen Berger.
Oh, okay.
She was the editor for DC.
But she met with the comics dealers at some summit, and her first line of, you know, she said, okay, we all know that Secret Wars is crap, and everybody agreed. And then she said, but I know you certainly like the sales. And everybody cheered, because I guess it was selling gangbusters. I never bought any of these issues, but I do remember when I came back from, I was in the Navy at the time, came back from overseas, and there was a young guy in a business suit and a briefcase, and he was buying his comics at the store, and he held up a Secret Wars issue with Spider-Man in the black suit, and I guess it was issue 9, and he held it up all excited, telling the guy at the counter, man, it's finally getting close to ending. He was so excited, he couldn't wait to take the book and go home. That was another issue in the book, was, I guess, Spider-Man, his costume, the black costume. I did buy that issue of Spider-Man in the Philippines. And then it was like 7 months later, I was back in San Diego, 9 months later. And that's when the Secret Wars, they were showing Spider-Man's new costume.
You remember the story in the book? The book we're talking about is Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, which is a great book. Remember the story about the black Spider-Man costume? Some reader actually sent Shooter the idea, and Shooter paid him like $250 for it, and then it ended up getting used in the Secret Wars. I think Kenner liked the idea. First, they didn't like it, but Kenner liked the idea. Oh, two Spider-Man figures.
Yeah, we can dig that. They see money signs.
Originally, what was supposed to happen was the Secret Wars, Spider-Man got the costume.
Right.
And then in the Spider-Man book, he comes back to the planet Earth wearing the costume. Instead, he is wearing the costume in Spider-Man, or Amazing Spider-Man. And then, like I said, 7, 8, 9 months later, it shows up in Secret Wars. The reason why was Jim Shooter kept remaking these people do the stories over and over again, saying this is wrong. But then that's when, you know, this woman, you know, said they were going to do Secret Wars too. And, you know, the dealers were all cheering. But like I said, that book was huge. It sold all over the place.
It was, yeah.
And it changed everything. And I guess in Secret Wars, they made mention of it in the other books, but you didn't always have to buy them. I know in Walt Simonson's Mighty Thor, at the very bottom of one page, you had 3 blank panels. And it said something happened because Thor went to Avengers Mansion. And then it said, you'll have to see later. And then it was a few months later, they published the 3 panels in the letters page. You see, you can cut them out, paste them in that strip. As a joke, but it's basically just the Avengers running towards you. But, you know, that's how Walt Simonson got out of the Secret Wars.
This is number 2, right?
No, the first one.
Okay.
In the Secret Wars 2, you had to write the storyline into your comic. And Walt Simonson didn't want to do it, but in his case, he did a character called Curse, which turned out to be a fantastic story. But you had to basically force a shoehorn something from Secret Wars 2 into your story.
The Beyonder.
And yeah, the Beyonder. It was the Beyonder. And
wasn't he in Secret Wars?
2, I think.
It was 2.
He was in both, wasn't he?
He might have been in the first one, but I just remember him from the second one because he had the Jerry Curls and the Michael
Jackson. Yeah, and
Jackson.
He had like the white Michael Jackson
suit.
Yeah.
But that became kind of a tradition for Marvel, too. Afterwards, they'd have the event books. Almost every year, they'd have these huge events.
Because the kids were off school, so
that's
the summer
right.
event. Yeah.
And all the mainstream or the major titles would have to somehow shoehorn these stories in, and I think that probably began with Secret Wars, then. Probably began with Shooter.
Probably.
Yeah,
I'm
the
guessing.
First one.
Yeah.
Now, DC did Crisis of Infinite Earths, but there was a purpose behind that one.
Yeah, they were
cleaning house.
But since
cleaning all the imaginary universes. And
yeah, but
like
that was great fun.
But I loved it. Yeah, you're right. I loved it.
Well, then they brought it back because Alan Davis, you know, who did Captain Britain and Excalibur, loved the DC, you know, alternate universes. So he did an Excalibur issue where it just all was crazy and there's all these different ones. And then Marvel decided they really liked the multiple Earth thing and started playing around with it. Well, they always did that in Captain Britain. And then Alan Davis and Alan Moore did it. And it just continued on, and DC started bringing it back. And the issue with DC, what their problem is, and I'm told this is why they did that New 52, was DC keeps making acquisitions. You know, they buy the Fosse characters.
Yeah.
You know, they go buy the Charlton characters.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do with them, and they don't want to put them into the regular, you know, DC continuity. So they create Earth X or Earth Z or Earth Alpha. And, you know, it's just, it's a big mess. And basically they scoot over things they don't want anymore into some other made-up planet. And then when they decide it is popular, they move it from the made-up planet and put it into another one of these Earths. And that's where it just turns into a big mess. It doesn't make sense. It's not right. And that's one thing DC said, that Marvel started from the ground up and built their comics on one world. So I guess they decided to reboot the whole series trying to do that, which, you know, I thought Crisis was a good idea, and it was absolutely a fantastic story by Marv Wolfman and George Perez.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard, you know, and it seemed like they kind of rebooted their stories. They changed Flash. He was Wally West.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was telling Al the other day, one thing that was neat about those comics was that when Flash would run somewhere, he'd stop. I remember the first issue started where he ran, like, you know, 70 miles, and he had to stop, and he bought 6 Baby Ruth candy bars. And then he said, that's what it cost me, 72 miles, 6 candy bars. And whenever he ran, just like any runner, you're burning off calories and you need the food and the energy. And they were always playing with things like, oh, that's really interesting. And all the comics, Green Lantern Corps, everything basically started over and changed. And then, like I said, I didn't really read the comics much after that. But then I started, you know, they were starting to change everything back the way it used to be. And some writers and artists saying the problem was that it just shoehorned us into, you know, putting straitjackets on everybody, that you couldn't do things. Well, it's a mess. And that's one thing Alan Moore was talking about, making fun of the comics industry and saying how bad it was and how, you know, DC screwed him over. And he was the one that said the problem is they take the stuff they don't want anymore and throw it on some other planet. And he said, it's an easy fix. The fix is so simple. If they did this, it would solve all the problems. They wouldn't have to do a big mini-series or maxi-series explaining it. It's very simple. But I'm not going to tell them. And then he brought it up again. It's such a simple solution. Well, and I believe him, because I always see him do that, where he just has some simple idea, and you wonder, why didn't they ever do that before? And, you know, I don't think about it much, but sometimes I wonder what it is, you know.
I know, I was really excited about you telling me what that
was.
Oh,
you know, he never told us, but I'm sure it is simple and would be really good, but, you know, oh, well. That's all I got.
No, go.
I'm just excited that we're kind of talking about the 80s, the Marvel comics of the 80s, because this is kind of when I grew up and started getting into comics, was the late 80s, but then I would go back and read the early to mid 80s stuff, and that's what I loved as a kid. I mean, one of the first comic books I visually ever saw as a little kid on the rack was the Secret Wars issue, I remember.
Oh, okay.
And I loved it. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at all these superheroes together. Like, this is great.
Yeah,
so it works bringing in those kind of things. Used to work great bringing in kids to stores and, well, into comics rather.
Where'd you buy it? Or where'd you see
it? Well, once again, it was on a spinner rack at like a gas station or something like that, you know?
I mean,
it was easily accessible.
That's
the thing. They're still doing books like this where they bring all the heroes together. But if it's at a comic store, when's the last time you saw a ton of kids at a comic store?
Well, if you're a parent, why would you want to bring your kids in the store? The books are expensive, you have no interest. You know, I mean, that's the thing. If you went to the grocery store, your kid could go look at the books while you shopped, you know.
Used to be cheap escapist.
Usually the parents brought them in because the kid either wanted it really bad or just to give them something cheap to read or whatever.
Right.
Now they get them a video game or rent them a movie and that's
it. Which, you know, I mean, that's fine too. But, you know,
it's actually cheaper to rent a movie or probably rent a video game than it is to buy comics, and it lasts longer, at least the video game does.
That's the thing. You can read a regular comic these days in 10-12 minutes probably.
Easily.
Well, that's one thing in the book they were also talking about was how they didn't have a hit. Like, you know, it'd been a while since they had a hit and they're trying to manufacture something else. And they talk about in the 70s how things were kind of dire at certain points in the 80s when it was kind of dire.
It always gets dire.
Well, you know, they say that, but there was never a point ever that I always thought it was ever dire. I guess to me, I could always find something I wanted. I mean, there was always alternative comics, which I really liked. There was always back issues of stuff that I hadn't read in the past that I discovered. You know, and it wasn't the case when I was a kid. Now you can find trades, you know. And, again, this is why I have trouble understanding why Chew number one was worth so much money and those Walking Deads are worth
low
so much
run.
Money.
Low print run.
You know, you forgot Dez is Chew, didn't you? Sorry, Dez.
Dez, I'm sorry.
Well, no, the slump hit the comic stores more than it did the readers because it... According to the book, in 1990 or 80-something, whatever it was, whatever year, it went from being in the 90s from like 8,000 comic book stores in the U.S. to 4,000 within a span of a year. So that's how
that's
bad it got.
Drop.
And that was right after Superman Reborn and all that, and the Marvels, all that stuff. People just gave up on it, and it was
well,
just
the
like...
the Heroes World thing.
Yeah, and the Heroes World thing, yeah.
That really destroyed, you know, like all the shops just disappeared, and that was... the final nail in the coffin. That
no,
was.
I don't think I remember this because I stopped reading in the early 90s for yeah. a long period of time. What was the Heroes World?
Oh, boy. Go.
Well, if it's too complicated to get
no,
into.
No,
I can tell someone, correct me if I'm wrong, because I can be really wrong.
Yeah, we both read the books. So.
Marvel Comics was one. I kept hearing rumors, and I go in these stores, that Marvel was wanting to open up their own Marvel store, you know, like a Disney store or Warner Brothers store. And every time I heard that, these guys at the store were like, oh, my God, that scares me. Well, the problem is, if Marvel has all their product in the store, you know, I mean,
I don't... You have to go to the comic shop to get them. You have to go to the Marvel store to get the comics.
Yeah, and, you know, Marvel was buying everything. You're buying sports card companies to corner the market, you know, toy, you know. But I don't read a lot of Marvel comics. You know, if there's something I like, I'll pick one up, but... I bought all kinds of different comics, and but the store is counting. I guess a lot of people buy Marvel and Marvel only.
Mm-hmm. And Marvel zombies.
Which, you know, if that's what you like, that's fine. But I just thought, well, fine. You know, the problem is if Marvel had their own stores, you know, they wouldn't sell their books to other stores. Maybe I don't
right,
know.
That's it exactly.
And then they ended up buying Heroes World. There was a writer or editor, owner or something.
Yeah, Ivan Snyder, I think, was the guy's name. He had a chain of stores, I think, in Jersey or something.
He was with Marvel, and Martin Goodman fired him.
Yeah.
And so what the deal was, they let him take all this original artwork that Marvel had.
Toys, too, I think.
Toys, yeah. All kinds of junk from the Marvel had put out. And he went and opened a chain of stores in New Jersey. And it was very successful, and he was selling old artwork, comic books, the old Marvel. He created Marvel Mania, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is Marvel's mail order thing. And like Ideal did 6 plastic figures of Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Spider-Man. And he took all that back stock and was selling the stores, comics, you know, you name it. And he had his own distribution service for that little area, and which was Heroes World. Well, Marvel, when they were trying to do the store, they were wanting to set up their own distribution network. So they went and bought Heroes World. And then they told all the other, you know, comics companies, if you want Marvel Comics, you have to order from us. Well, the thing is, I don't know the number on this, but when you ordered, say, from Diamond or Bud Plant or any of these other distributors, you had to buy so much stock and to be able to get the discount. And, I mean, that includes, like, Cerebus, Archie Comics, Marvel mm-hmm. Comics, DC Comics, but you could buy everything for your store. Well, all of a sudden, you couldn't get Marvel Comics. So you had to order so much from Marvel to get a discount. Then you had to order so much from, you know, the other companies. And a lot of stores couldn't handle that. They weren't getting their discount, and they either had to decide just sell Marvels or don't sell Marvels at all. And, the other issue, Marvel couldn't deliver on it because Heroes World was only set up to take care of a little, I think, a tri-state
Jersey,
area.
Jersey.
Yeah,
yeah
it was Jersey.
Tri-state area, yeah, that's right.
And just a little tiny area, and they weren't set up to be a national network. And so basically, it completely destroyed the whole comics industry, put out the other a lot of the other distributors.
Diamond was the only one left.
Yeah, Diamond. I remember DC and...
Capital went under because Capital was having the DC books, I think, and all the other ones or whatever.
But DC and another, maybe Image, set up a exclusive thing with Diamond.
Capital. Oh, yeah, they went.
With Diamond.
Yeah, they basically put Capital there. So Diamond became, when the Heroes role went under, everybody went with, all Diamond picked up everybody and Capital City, like, went under, basically.
So, where Diamond was the only game in town at that point.
It is.
And most
still kind of is.
And most of the little comic stores are completely gone. And, you know, I mean, that was, it was a lot of different things going on, but yeah, it was insane.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, there was no point in my life where there's always, I'm finding all kinds of books, especially now with all the reprints and stuff like that. And, you can find them, you can find them a good price, and there's always stuff to read. Or books that you didn't, weren't interested in the past, you think, well, that was really good, and you find it. To me, there's never a point, and I mean, I'm going out buying these books. So even though the stores are saying there's no hits, there's still stuff that I'm getting from them, you know?
Yeah, but you're getting it because you're in the know. If somebody doesn't know and they're coming off the street, if you go to the, if you go, where are the new comics at over there? You're not going to see too many indie comics. You're just going to see Marvels and DCs. So you're basically going like, okay, well, I guess I'll pick up a Spider-Man or this or that. And, you know, you're kind of like, you know, hogging the market. And Marvel's always done that since the 70s.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I gotta say, that's gonna be it for this episode. But I think we had some really awesome conversations, and I want to thank my good friend Brent for joining us on this episode.
Sorry we didn't play any of your songs, Brent.
Yeah, that's my fault because I didn't really have anything prepared by the band. But you know, we're working on stuff here and there. But you know, once again, everybody, thank you so much for listening to us and joining us as we kind of rant and rave about the industry. Especially the Marvel industry on this episode. A couple shout-outs. First, I want to thank Yancey Street Comics for having a pretty awesome free comic day today. And you guys can, you know, just check them out. We have a link on our website.
Comics World?
That's, oh, and also Comics World.
Comics World still has.
Which actually had some fantastic free comics. So, hey, too bad you missed it.
But check those guys out, too, because, I mean, they always have really good deals and sales going on at that shop also. And, Al, you've got another podcast.
Oh, Slow Robot A Go-Go, the movie podcast with Mao and Dr. Morbius.
The parts unknown.
Yeah, thank you very much. Where they do movie reviews and all sorts of cool stuff. And, yeah.
You can find us on our blog. If you listen to us on iTunes, please leave us an iTunes review. Please. And you can find our blog where we show examples of what we talked about, plus all the links. You can find Al's blog. You can find Dallas's comic strip. It's all on the sidebar. You can go to the blog if you go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Yeah, him.
You just can't get it, can you, Al?
No, I can't.
He's got a good blog, does good podcasts,
know,
but he can't.
I know. I'm not in sync.
We were just in sync just now.
Yeah, like the band in sync, you know, not in sync.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us, and please look for a new episode coming out probably in another week or so. And until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
We got that one.
Hey, you did it.